The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported that the United States surpassed 100,000 overdose deaths between April 2020 and April 2021. It's the largest number of overdoses the U.S. has ever reported in a 12-month period, up over 28% from the year before. Wisconsin ranked 27th in the nation in the overdose death rate over that span, losing nearly 1,600 people. We're learning more now about what caused that increase in overdoses and how access to treatment plays a role in the issue. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or a loved one struggled with addiction? Have you had trouble finding treatment that you could get to, that you could afford? What was your experience like? What advice maybe do you have for others going through the same thing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Elizabeth Salisbury Afshar is an associate professor for the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health in the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW-Madison. Dr. Salisbury Afshar, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, before we dig into treatment, what are your thoughts on this increase? Why do you think the death rate from overdoses went up so much over that year span?
Yeah, it's a great question, and one that, you know, I don't think has a single answer, but definitely we are seeing that there continues to be more and more fentanyl in the drug supply, which is, fentanyl is a really, really potent opioid. So if someone buys a pill or buys what they believe to be heroin and it has fentanyl in it, again, which is much more potent than a lot of pharmaceutical opioids or than heroin, and they aren't expecting that, their risk for overdose definitely goes way up. Other things that we think are likely contributing really relate to sort of the stressors, many of them related to the COVID-19 pandemic. So increased rates of isolation, increased anxiety, and additional stressors around jobs or housing security definitely can all play a role in terms of things that may either increase someone's use, or if someone has been in recovery or, you know, been able to abstain from using, may lead to a relapse. So lots of different factors that are likely at play here.
And when it comes to the overdose deaths, one strategy that's out there is the use of drugs like naloxone or Narcan. I want to give a listen to the new director of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy, Dr. Rahul Gupta, talking about access to these overdose reaction drugs.
So I firmly believe that no one should die of an overdose simply because they didn't have access to naloxone. But sadly, today, that's not the case. Across the country, we have problems in a way that oftentimes your zip code defines whether you're going to live or you're going to die.
Given all that fentanyl that's out there right now, how important is consistent access, Dr. Salisbury Afshar, to drugs like naloxone?
Yeah, so naloxone is a medication that can be administered at the point that someone's overdosing. It's not a long-term treatment, but it's an emergency treatment that is absolutely necessary. And really, when we look at research studies that have been done, we know that people who use opioids themselves are the people who are most likely to save someone's life. So it's really, really important that we get naloxone into, you know, really everyone's hands, but in particular, people who are using substances and may be exposed, definitely friends and family members. And so it's something that is a super safe medication, you know, and it's really easy to administer. Most of the time, the formulation that is being distributed is a nose spray. So if you think that someone's overdosing, you can literally spray this into their nostril and call 911, and that can be the difference in saving someone's life.
Talking to Dr. Elizabeth Salisbury Afshar from the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW-Madison, looking at a jump in overdose fatalities in the last year. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had trouble finding treatment, maybe for yourself or a loved one, for an addiction? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Salisbury Afshar, I want to get into now that addiction treatment side of things, because that seems like the best money we could spend in a lot of ways is to prevent people from getting to that overdose stage in the first place. What do you see out there when it comes to access to good treatment?
Absolutely. And I think one of the challenges is that when someone identifies that they want help or that their use may be becoming more problematic, can be really hard to figure out even what you're looking for. And not all addiction treatment offers the same services, right? So, you know, for opioid addiction or opioid use disorder, which is the medical term that we use, we have both medication treatments and counseling and behavioral therapies. What we know, again, from really at this point, lots of research studies, really large scale evidence base, we know that people who use medications as part of their treatment plan are more likely to remain engaged in treatment, are less likely to use opioids that are not prescribed to them. And in the case of two of these medications, methadone or buprenorphine, also called Suboxone, they have been shown to reduce death rates by as much as 50%. So I'll say that again, to reduce death rates by as much as 50%. That being said, you know, it can be hard to figure out where you should even go. And so, you know, in the state of Wisconsin, there are a couple of really easy resources that I would just want for people to know about. One is that you can call 211. There's also a Wisconsin treatment directory that's available online. And that's a great place to start if you yourself or you know someone who's looking for treatment services for any kind of substance use disorder. The other great resource is to call your county DHS office, because in Wisconsin, a lot of the funds for addiction treatment services actually go down to the county level. So I live in Dane County. In Dane County, it's the Dane County Behavioral Health Resource Center, the BHRC. And there are actually individuals there who will help you navigate the treatment system. I think the key thing if you know to know is that if you're looking for opioid use disorder treatment services, is that if you go to a treatment program, they may not offer methadone, they may not offer buprenorphine, they may not offer any medication. And so it's unfortunately can be a little bit tricky, because it's important to sort of be familiar with what you're looking for and what the options are, or to try to identify a center that will help you be able to figure out if one of these medications might be the right fit for you.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Carrie is with us in Eau Claire. Carrie, hello.
Hello. So I'm sorry, my dog's in the back seat.
That's okay.
So my daughter, way back in 04, broke her femur and was given Vicodin and some other opioids, and became addicted to them. And back then, we didn't really know or understand what that was. And it took us quite a few years to even figure out what her addiction was. And so that segued into a heroin addiction. And now we have been through it all. And she's 35, and she's been sober for like 15 or 16 months now. But there's really no help, not in this area. She can't get an apartment to rent. She can't find mental health care. And it's so frustrating to see what she's been going through. And I can't find resources for her anymore.
Carrie, that's heartbreaking. I want to ask before I throw this to the doctor. I'm sorry you've been through this. What do you think worked 15 or 16 months ago? What is it that helped turn the tide here?
Well, they put her in jail, and she started in mental health court because her mental health has failed since she was drug seeking. They called her bipolar, and I always thought it was because she was drug seeking. And she's doing so much better now, but still, you know, the problems have mounted, the fines, the fees for court. And I mean, it's just, I don't think you can arrest your way through all of this. You know, you can't just put people in jail and expect them to get better.
Carrie, thank you so much for sharing that story. I'm sorry. Best to you. And of course to your daughter, Dr. Salisbury, Offshart, not unfortunately a unique story, I imagine.
Right. Unfortunately, the story that we just heard from Carrie is one that we hear and that I see all the time in my clinical practice. although she didn't acknowledge it, you know, I just want to acknowledge her, mm-hmm. that we know that having family members who are willing to stand by people with use disorders is so critical. Isolation, mental health problems are really common. You know, lots of people have histories of trauma. In this case, you know, it sounds like this young woman had a physical injury. But we know these are common comorbidities, and that families are actually a really critical piece of recovery, as are mental health services, physical health services, and access to really good counseling and when appropriate, medication services.
Thanks again for sharing that story at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Dr. Elizabeth Salisbury-Afshar, Associate Professor for the Department of Family Medicine and Community Health at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, talking about addiction treatment and overdose prevention. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a story or an experience to share or a question for your guest about treatment and what is out there, call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk now with Dr. Elizabeth Salisbury-Afshar. She's an assistant associate professor at UW-Madison in the School of Medicine and Public Health's Department of Family Medicine and Community Health. We are talking about opioid addiction and overdoses and hope and treatment. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a story to share, your own or maybe a loved one, addiction, treatment? Did you find it? Was it out there for you? Call 800-642-1234. What do you wish you'd had that wasn't out there? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Salisbury-Afshar, a subject I know you're interested in, I've seen some other people bring this up, is, you know, for most of my health concerns, I might go to my primary care doctor if I have one, or the clinic I go to, or whatever. Why isn't that working with addiction?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, we are seeing it, and we are increasingly seeing it. And I think there's been a huge movement really over the last decade. I am a family medicine physician. That was my initial training. And, you know, more and more family and internal medicine docs, or, you know, physician's assistants or nurse practitioners, are starting to offer medication and naltrexone, which are two of the medications we can use for the treatment of opioid use disorder, but it's not happening at scale. And the reasons why, you know, are many. I think there's still a lot of stigma. Mm-hmm. I mean, first and foremost, there's still a lot of stigma around caring for people with addictions. We also know that most of us don't get much training. At least, you know, it's getting better now, but people who have trained 5, even 10 years ago, probably got nothing during their, during their formal curriculum. And then, you know, there's always concerns about time and just patient panels, et cetera. And I think a lot of healthcare providers right now are feeling stretched pretty thin with everything going on with the pandemic as well, which likely isn't helping us to get more and more treatment into primary care settings. The final thing I'll say is that really historically addiction treatment was in many ways very purposefully designed completely separate from hospitals, separate from clinics. And that's a problem. It's a big problem, because what it means is not only are the systems not integrated, but a lot of the people working in hospitals and clinics aren't very familiar with how to even refer. And so I think now we're really working to build some inroads and at least make sure that people know how to refer. But those systems have been separate and siloed for a very long time.
Yeah, why'd that happen? Why did this one health problem get isolated from the rest of the health system?
So I think the shortest answer is stigma. And, you know, historically, a lot of concern about the need for services to be anonymous, you know, and a lot of times individuals might not want their primary care provider to know that they were struggling with addiction. Folks who had the means didn't necessarily want their insurance to pay for it. Concerns about, will I lose my job? Will my friends know? Will my family know? And so the systems were really built separately. There are additional protections in federal regulations to actually make it a bit more complicated for us to even be able to share records with addiction treatment providers, to be able to share records. Again, those were primarily placed to be able to protect patients and their ability to keep their records private. But I think it really, you know, those were days before we really acknowledged addiction as a chronic health condition. And you know, as we heard from our caller earlier, this isn't something that stands alone. This is related to physical health. This is related to mental health. And if we're going to be able to provide good care for our patients, we need to be able to provide holistic care.
for someone out there listening, dealing with this right now, not sure where to turn, what would you suggest as first steps for them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think it kind of depends on where they feel comfortable. If folks feel comfortable talking to a primary care provider, I think that can be a good place to start, especially if they have an established relationship. I also, the resources I mentioned earlier, calling 211 or looking online at the Wisconsin Treatment Directory can be really easy places to start just to look at options in your geographic area. And finally, your own county DHS office does receive funding for behavioral health services, and many county behavioral health offices will have people there who sort of work as navigators to do some assessment and help you figure out, you know, what your options are.
Go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Susan is with us in northern Wisconsin. Susan, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Susan?
Okay, I was listening to your show, and you said that there's resources out there. You know, I have a sad scenario, too, and one of my children were addicted to opiates, and he actually wanted help. And I searched high and low, and, you know, from a mother's point of view, my heart was breaking. And there is nothing. There's resources out there, but there's only outpatient. There's no inpatient facilities that help with counseling and the addiction process. You know, they take them in for a day, and they send them back out on the street. You know, these children need to be, like, in for 30 days and, you know, and help them work through this, you know, the process of withdrawing from opiates is just horrible. Mm. You know, the pain that they go through and the emotional and mental state is just overwhelming. And like this one lady was just talking, and she was saying how, you know, her daughter, I believe, mm-hmm. was addicted, and, you know, and she ran out of, you know, ways, you know, try and find help. Or I can feel her pain. Because I did too. I searched high and low, you know, and the only way you can get really any help for addiction is if you have money.
Susan, thank you for sharing that story. Sorry to hear that. Dr. Salisbury Afshar, access to inpatient, she's saying, inpatient treatment longer term as opposed to shorter outpatient visits. What do you think of what she had to say?
Yeah, so I want to acknowledge and agree, although there are some services available, definitely the more rural and, you know, areas you are in the state, the fewer resources there are. There is no question there. Additionally, residential treatment or inpatient treatment is not covered in Wisconsin by Medicaid, is not covered by public insurance. Most of the patients I work with have Medicaid. And even though there are residential treatment programs in Dane County where I live and work, people don't have money to pay for room and board. It does pay for the counseling part of the care that's provided in a residential facility, but it doesn't pay for room and board. One of the things that may be newer in the last few years is that, Medicaid just started paying for the counseling part of residential treatment. Two is that each county receives funding, that the funding actually originates from the federal government, to be able to cover services. I apologize because I know the most about Dane County, but in Dane County, the county can help fund that room and board portion for patients who don't have ability to pay. So a lot of it comes down to how your county is using the resources they have. And things change pretty frequently because there has been so much money from the federal government. So what existed a couple years ago is likely different today and will likely be different a couple years from now. The good news is there's more and more funding. The bad news is it doesn't mean that treatment is readily accessible, and it doesn't mean that the level of treatment that someone is looking for is readily accessible.
True.
And so, yeah, I really, my heart goes out to Susan and her son.
Susan, thanks again for sharing that story. Dr. Salisbury Afshar, you just mentioned some positive steps there when it comes to funding and coverage of at least different aspects of treatment. Do you see any other positive signs that could be pointing us in a better direction after this year of bad news on this issue?
So there have been some things that have changed at the federal level, really as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, that may help with expanding access, in particular to medication treatments. So the ability to prescribe a medication like buprenorphine, the one that can be prescribed in primary care offices, is a bit easier now. We used to have to do online education and get a special waiver. You still need the special waiver, but the education is no longer required to treat 30 patients or fewer at a time. There's new regulation that will allow for mobile methadone. Rural areas in particular really often don't have any access to methadone, which is a highly effective treatment. The regulations are just coming out. So it's not available right now today, but I am hopeful that in the next couple of years, we'll see increased access to methadone in the more rural parts of the state.
And that's huge. I mean, I just double checked this. I think this is still true. The farthest north methadone center in Wisconsin is in Wausau, and there's a lot of northern Wisconsin beyond that. That sheer geographic access sounds like it could be a game changer.
Absolutely. And, I think the other challenge, even if something, I'm actually from rural Illinois initially, it's an hour to the nearest methadone program from my hometown. But if you don't have a car to get there every day, right, and there's not public transit. So I can completely relate. And that's what much of the northern part of Wisconsin is dealing with. And so I think even if there is a program within an hour, you have to go every single day during the first months of care. And so that's a huge barrier. And so I think I'm hopeful that things like mobile methadone will allow for some increased access.
And just in our last minute or so, you talked about how family care primary physicians are getting more training on this. Do you see that as a growing trend that we're going to see the normal healthcare system do a lot more to help people dealing with addiction?
I think we are seeing it. It is not happening quickly enough, in my opinion, because again, when you look at, for one thing, this is a place where there wouldn't be stigma. People can go there. Anyone can go there. We have primary care offices in most areas of the state, right? And so just in terms of being able to scale it, I think it's critical. Also, opioid addiction is a chronic condition and people often need services long-term. And so it makes sense that treatment would be available in settings where we're used to treating other chronic conditions. Counseling can be really tremendous piece of treatment. And I think, we want to make sure people have access to that as well.
Thanks to our guest today, Dr. Elizabeth Salisbury-Afshar with UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. You can still share your thoughts on addiction and treatment on the Ideas Network Facebook page.